I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this, cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some house stones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again, move little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you, I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Well, here we are all again. I'm sitting here in my room alone, and you're in your room, presumably alone as well, listening to some incorporeal voice remind you that you're alone. I don't know how fun that is, but let's make this fun. My name is Jake Anderson, and you're listening to the Anti-Media Radio again. Again, you're listening to a backup host because your real host decided he wanted to go on vacation to Detroit, Michigan. I mean, Costa Rica. Sorry, Nick Burnaby, founder of the Anti-Media, is in Costa Rica. So as we're in the trenches right now battling the info war, not Alex Jones info war, the real info war, Nick Burnaby is in a hammock somewhere with a Mai Tai or a Sex on the Beach, either the verb or the noun, I'm not sure, doing his thing. And you know, he deserves it, because what he's done is he's built a platform for us to talk about these things outside of the spectrum of corporate news, which is important. Because if we know anything from the last 30, 40 years of this disgusting experiment of capitalism that we've seen, it's we know that once money gets involved, truth flies out the window. Now, money can come in and start to say, oh, well, there's this thing called fake news. And basically, if something is against the narrative that we've set out for our corporate handlers, if it goes against that narrative, that's fake news. So when we lied to you about the Iraq war, you know, for a decade, clean decade, let's make it a baker's dozen years, they lied to us about having weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That wasn't fake news. You see, because it was the corporate media doing it. You catch the double standard here? When the corporate media is involved, it's all just fun and games, and they're just, you know, I don't know, they're just doing their thing. But when the alternative media is trying to catch them, well, then it's fake news, and it's sad. But we're going to do what we can. And like I said, we're in the trenches here. And one thing that I'm interested in, and we're going to talk about it, we actually have a panel coming up. Our longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, will be joining us soon. In fact, I think this may be him right now. it. I was just told the show is on hold. Not really sure what that means. I think we're back on. Maybe the CIA got to us. DB, you still there? Well, I'm going to keep talking. Maybe I won't keep talking. But so where are you at tonight, man? What are you thinking? Where's Pizzagate at? Oh man. All right. I think I got us back on. So I want to talk.
I think we're
about
back now. That's.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I think we missed some. I think we lost a nice juicy chunk of talk radio there. Because what happens is, and I don't know if anyone really cares about this, is when someone calls into the show, it spooks me and I go into panic mode. And I press accept the call because why would I not accept the call? I don't want to be an introvert. So I accept the call, and then what it does is it hangs up the call into the radio station. See, you're already bored. I knew you would be. But that's, you know, that's my journey. That's where I'm at. That's what I'm dealing with. We're going to have an interesting fellow on tonight. His name is Cassius. And DB, you know Cassius. And I wanted to have him on to talk about kind of where Generation X is in relation to the coming age of artificial intelligence. And kind of... the singularity, how it's going to hit. It's going to hit slowly. The first rollout of it here is going to come within the next 5 years. I mean, we're already in it. We're already algorithmic artificial intelligence. You know, we keep kicking the end zone further down, but basically the birth of algorithmic artificial intelligence was the birth of the singularity. Ray Kurzweil predicted it a long time ago. We keep kicking the end zone, and then we score a touchdown. And artificial intelligence is here. Oh, wait, no, it's not actually artificial intelligence because it's not making out with us yet, which is what people want, which is going to happen. But what I'm interested in is not so much whether artificial intelligence is going to make out with me, although I am interested in that. It's what the next phase of it is going to be. And I'm pretty sure the next phase of it is going to be in virtual reality. And I think what's going to happen, two things are going to happen at the same time. And DB, I think you'll agree with me on this. That what's going to happen is we're going to have an age of automation that's going to basically eviscerate the middle class job market. And, you know, regular cashiers, truck drivers, basically anyone with a middle class job, masseuses, sex workers, I mean the whole glut of middle-class jobs are about to go out the window because robots will be able to do it cheaper, more efficiently, less awkwardly. You know, I saw an article today that there's already a plan for a bar that's going to open up. You get a morning espresso and a blowjob from a robot in the morning. This is a real thing. I'm not making this up. I mean, I could make it up. You wouldn't know, but I am not. It's called Minds.com. Go to it. If you Google Minds.com and espresso bar, you're going to get an article about an espresso bar with sex workers. And so where am I going with all this? God, I wish I knew. No. Where we're going with this is that we're going to see two conflating, swords of the singularity hitting us at the same time. One is going to be we're not going to have any jobs, which means the government is going to have to institute a universal basic income. They're going to have to. Otherwise, no one will have money to do anything, and they will lose their minds and take up arms and destroy the government, which should be done anyway, but that's a different issue. The other side of it is that we're going to have all this free time now, because since we're going to have a universal basic income, we're going to have a lot of time to sit around and think about what we actually want to do. And that's where Cassius comes in, and I'm going to try and add him to the call here. And because what I'm interested in is how Generation X is going to react to this, having time on their own, where they don't have to work, they don't have to try and open a business. I mean, they should try and open a business, but
you mean they might actually be free to learn and create?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah, it's going to be a creator class. It's going to be a maker's class. And
oh,
I like
my God, think of the things they'll think about if they're not working.
Yeah, I know. If they're not working, and they're not going to have to work, because they're going to have a universal basic income, and that's going to have to happen, because otherwise the truck drivers will get their shotguns out and go to the city hall and start blowing people's heads off. Look, I say that with all due respect for truck drivers, but I've been interviewing a guy who ran for president. His name is Zoltan Istvan, and he ran for the Transhumanist Party. And even he was audacious enough to say that if you take their jobs from them, the truck drivers will lose their minds. And we're not just talking about just truck drivers. You know, we're talking about the basic middle class person. If you take their job from them, and you're not giving them any subsidy to make up for it, and they have a family to take care of, things are not going to be good. And that's going to spread all the way down to the working class as well, not just the middle class working class, but the poverty-stricken class that's long been complaining, that should have been taken care of a long time ago. All of a sudden, they're going to be like, yeah, how does it feel? It doesn't feel very good, does it? You know?
Don't worry, Trump's going to initiate the new free college for truck drivers plan.
Is that true? I don't know. That's not true.
By Google.
You're being facetious. Oh, you and your facetious little glibs. I'm going to check in real quick. Cassius, are you there?
Hey, what's up, man? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. I can hear you loud and clear, buddy. So I don't know if you heard what I was just talking about. I was talking about kind of the death of the middle class, which has already come about through kind of neoliberal policies that have, you know, glutted trade and all that, but I think it's really going to come into full scale when you start talking about automated deep learning programs, artificial intelligence deep learning programs that are able to basically replace most of us in what we do, except for the creative class. And I think that's where people like me and you flourish. We're both in Generation X, actually, but you're at the very front end of it, and I'm at the very tail end. I'm 34. Literally the very tail end of Gen. Is it Gen X, or am I wrong on the generations here?
I'm generation I'm a millennial, born February
millennials
4th,
that's what I meant. I'm talking Generation X. Good
but
Lord.
Hey, you know what's
okay,
on
everyone
my mind?
turn off computers, go to bed, show's over. No, I meant millennials. We're part of the millennials. Gen X is what my sister's a part of, and that's why I got that stuck in my brain. So, Cassius, when you talk to people your age, and I mean just the general bunch of them, not people who are as enlightened as you, and by the way, Cassius runs a website, a really cool website called Era of Wisdom, and he has written for the Anti-Media, he's written for a bevy of really cool publications. Really cool guy, and he's also working on a documentary. You know, you're not working on a documentary right now about the pharmaceutical industry.
Yep, rendering some animations right now. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours long so far. About 21 days until it's going to be released.
Excellent.
Yep, got Josh. Josh Paniagua on narration.
Right.
I don't know when the last time he wrote an article was, but, you know, he's with the Anti-Media too. But anyway, you know what's on my mind?
What's
I just
that,
found
man?
out there's a bill, some big pharma bill they're calling an overhaul of the FDA that just passed. I've never even heard about it. It's called the 21st Century Cures Act. You hear about that?
No, I haven't. This is brand spanking new to me.
It's like a TPP of big pharma. Even the Bernie Sanderses and Elizabeth Warrenses are talking shit about it.
Well, if they're talking shit against it, that probably means it's good. No, I don't know. Actually, I'm ostensibly a fan of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, but let's be honest, they're pro big state. They want the government to wipe your ass for you, and I used to be on that side of it.
They're gonna give us all robots then, I guess.
Yeah, well, there we go. I mean, if it's gonna be pro singularity, then I guess. But you know, the reason I'm talking about this is I wrote an article, and it was posted on the antimedia.org today. It's called U.S. Senate Admits the Dawn of Artificial Intelligence is Here. Now, the editors, I love them to death, but they took out the first part of the title, which was, in strange hearing, U.S. Senate admits the dawn of artificial intelligence. Because it's quite obvious that the dawn of artificial intelligence is here. We've had it. We've been using it in the palm of our hands for a decade. What's weird is that the government is just now finally starting to talk about it. And even Ted Cruz took to the Senate floor and said, whether we recognize it or not, artificial intelligence is already seeping into our daily lives. Can't you just imagine Ted Cruz slithering across the floor saying that? I can't. And then I got a statement from Zoltan, who really just kind of nailed it on the head. He said, as always, government is already one step behind, talking about trying to retrain jobs for the AI age while not realizing that in the 2 to 5 years one spends retraining people, AI will already replace those newly created jobs. The facts are very simple. AI will be better at everyone's job. The sole exception is the career of being an artist, as those jobs are subjective. But any nuts and bolts performance type jobs will soon be on the chopping block, up for grabs to the best AI and robot makers. And he's talking about deep learning software programs there. And I really think he's correct on that. And he's trying to get a job with the Trump administration right now. And he says he doesn't think his chances are good. But no, Cassius, I hadn't heard about that bill, but I am interested in what. Because you are self-identified as an agorist, as a volunteerist.
Yeah.
What do you think, where are you going to try and lead yourself and people around you in the coming decade when there's no jobs, not that you would want one, but,
yeah.
But how are you going to be trying to generate capital, so to speak? What do you want to do, provided that robots are going to take care of the bare essentials for us? What do you want to do with that time?
Well, people are going to have to work in their own economies. You're right, I am an agorist, and I don't believe in working for something that doesn't benefit us in the long run. You know, we have to stick together with people that care about the same way of life and know how to customize every aspect of their way of life. That's what it boils down to, customizing every aspect of our way of life. You know, we should be practicing that right now. Every single
for those of us, not everyone really even knows what. Could you provide us with a healthy working definition of agorism?
Agorism is. It can also be referred to as counter-economics. It's the practice of only spending money and putting effort into one's own community or one's own community of interests. Not spending money if it's a corporation you don't believe in and understand, and you know, it's spending money in the community and only devoting effort to one's own community and people. So, economically, socially, everywhere.
So divesting from corporate influence that is not beneficial to the community and investing in our own skill sets as a community.
Yeah, it's an ultimate form of mindfulness. You know, it's just supporting each other. Like, we all neglect to remember that We used to have economic niches in a community, and those have been outsourced to huge corporations and scrambling for jobs. It's all contrived. It's all a market of commodities. One time I wrote this article that has it's the something along the lines of scrambling for dollars in a market of commodities. That's what we're doing. Scrambling for Federal Reserve notes in a market of commodities because necessities have been monopolized. But we used to, you know, produce necessities and depend on each other for necessities, and that's been monopolized. So we have to customize every.
The worst thing about it all, too, is that especially here in the heart of the Matrix, we truly do trade our labor for worthless paper. And we put all our faith in a military that increasingly around the world is losing ground, not winning, and getting more desperate. And that's why we're paying more and more taxes. And like Cassius is a fan of agorism, agorism is basically stating the federal income tax is now absolved and we're going to put all that back into our local community. We can start something simple like that because we know where all the federal income tax goes. It goes straight to the Bank of England, man, and nobody knows who the shareholders are. And we can assume it goes to the Queen. And how many billions a year is that? I mean, it's ridiculous.
And it's in the zeitgeist. You know, Trump at one point had – he was interviewing for head of Treasury. He was actually interviewing a guy that wanted to audit the Fed. So it's in the zeitgeist. It didn't happen. He picked someone else. I mean, he's pretty much – his entire cabinet is just a who's who of the same old people again. So it's not going to happen this time around. But it's in the zeitgeist, and I think the millennials are very much starting me as the tail end of it, and Cassius is the vanguard of it. Is really just starting to just say we're sick of this crap. We're sick of not being a part of a community we can believe in. And I think that's what a lot of people. Where a lot of people would flock to the agorist belief is you want to be putting divesting yourself and your soul into something you believe in, a community you believe in, and not just this kind of corporate pig breast that we're milking off of.
So when are we going to buy like $2,500 houses in Detroit and start our own test community?
Well, we'll get sprayed from the skies.
Yeah.
We have to defend our airspace. Isn't that freaky? Like to know that I think the longer we procrastinate in becoming extreme, not extreme as in violent, but extreme as in disciplined about how we spend our effort, until we get extreme about devoting our effort to different things in life, you know, becoming disciplined about customizing every single way we do everything. For example, school. We're going to have our own customized way of raising our children. We're going to put, if we don't have the time to put effort into thinking about what we're going to teach our children every day, then we aren't, what do we have? Nothing. We can't be working for someone else with all our effort. We have to spend our time just, you know, it's the hardest before a structure, some kind of direction of the people is established. And people that have the mind for it have to establish structures that people can follow to make their own custom ways of living outside the system. So,
and this is all going to get very problematic, not problematic, it's going to get very confusing as we enter this transhumanist age where you're going to have people customizing their own bodies with transhumanist technologies. We're going to have people customizing their minds. We're going to have people customizing the very space they live in because, and this brings us back to the virtual reality. In the next few years, it's already starting to happen. It's going to be very, very possible and probable that people are going to want to spend a lot of their time in virtual reality spaces. And that's going to take more people out of the job market. It's going to make it easier for most millennials to be sitting around in their virtual spaces and tuning out, because why would
that's
you not
a true concern out? That's a true concern. Like,
I mean, I'm worried everyone's going to tune out. As Zoltan said, the U.S. government must get used to the transhumanist age when millions of jobs will be lost every year to automation, and the only way to get used to that is to begin the laborious and challenging transition to a universal basic income where all the unemployed receive enough benefits to eat, have shelter, healthcare. You're laughing.
Eat the food that they call food.
Right, right.
Get the injections.
Well, you're laughing because you want it to go further than that, right? You wouldn't even want the universal basic income. You want people to create their own wares, right?
People can't do anything that they want because it's what they want. We have to reason through what is food. It's definitely not what they're trying to feed us. You know,
right.
Every single thing that they can convince us of that could be false to manipulate us with, they will. They will. So, you know, we have to have the ability on reserve to reason through every little thing that we're told to do this way. Where we already have a normalized system of poison, basically. You know, a lot of kids my age have no idea whatsoever that some things they were raised with, from vaccines to certain types of like junk food, are bad for you at all. They don't want to believe any of that. So some people my generation, you know, they're not anywhere near awake. And so that's all, things can become normalized so quick if we depend on anything that we don't reason through. If we don't have a reason to reason things through, then we're going to get caught slipping in any way conceivable.
And yeah, and we don't have to all agree on everything. I have friends that the second the word vaccine comes in, they'll automatically tune out, because when people have children, they get scared of the word vaccine. But I guess the point I try and always go to is we don't all have to agree on everything to agree that we are being poisoned. You know, whatever sources you want to look at, that's fine. That's your opinion on the sources. But the fact of the matter is, we can all agree that most of the foods that we are consuming on a daily basis, whether they have additives in them, whether they have GMOs in them, whether they have just excess sugar in them, I mean, look at how much money is spent advertising fast food, and that is just straight poison.
And if people insist on consuming it, then right. It's not my business. I don't want to tell anyone. I don't believe in using
force
against
people.
And it is our business, because, I mean, look at what is happening when you actually put the American healthcare standard on the open market and force people to pay all the premiums. We're seeing Obamacare skyrocketing. You know why? Because more and more people are getting on this train, and people are really, really going to the doctor a lot because they're sick as hell. People go to the doctor all the damn time. They go to the ER all the damn time because they wait and wait and they can't take work off and then they get real sick.
Damn.
And it happens constantly. And people need to understand, man, it is our business because we are now forced to pay for everyone's health care. So, and it's not even working, man. All it is just symptoms. It's pharmacological masking of symptoms. It's all it is. There's no actual treatment going on anymore at all. So it's going to get more and more and more expensive. I mean, it's getting to the point now, man, where people are starting to look at Canada as cheaper than here. That's ridiculous. That's the first time I've ever remembered in my whole life where people are like, you know what? Canada might have a better standard of living because it's cheaper there. That doesn't make any sense, dude. It's where we're at now.
I think that the theme of any type of transhumanist things becoming convenience-wise easier in the future, I think that it will have this sickly type of, not an undertone, but something much greater than an undertone to it. It'll be sickly, decayed. If you just observe the feeling you get on the streets of any city in America, you can feel the sickliness of people. You can see it in their eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mean to give up on people by saying that I respect people's will to do what they want with their bodies, you know, but damn, some people just really, I don't know what could wake them up. The consequences.
No, I know exactly
just
what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You look around at people and you do get a sense of, you almost feel like generations are being lost here in this maelstrom of propaganda and poison.
It's surreal.
It's very surreal. And but, you know, we can't give up because, you know, and these same people that are bringing children into the world now, unfortunately, a lot of these people are the same ones who the previous terror that they had used to tune out, they're now using that terror to tune out once again because they're afraid that it's going to harm their child. And in fact, it is going to harm their child, but it's going to be them the ones, it, they are going to be the ones harming their children because they are disabusing their children of the right to know certain things. And without going into to too much detail on this, I did want to talk about, you know, when you talk to people your age, you know, people who are enlightened and people that are not so enlightened, what do you think the major cause for concern is, Cassius?
The major cause for concern?
Yeah, you talk about, you know, we're being poisoned, and I know you believe very strongly in chemtrails and pharmaceuticals. There's a lot of different, you know, ways that we're being poisoned right now, but we have to start somewhere. So what do you think a suitable starting point is, given we're about to have a lot of free time, the robots are going to be doing everything for us. We're not going to have to clock in. What do you think a good starting point is? You're working on your documentary, which is awesome. We're all doing our own things here. But in terms of getting people organized somehow, what do you think we have to do here?
Well, in terms of getting people organized, I'm still learning what's effective to actually do that. But one of my best ideas is just giving people so much information that it makes them just snap out of it or something like that. But what I want to say is that a part in the documentary, see, before I go into the timeline from the 1600s to present day, I go into mercury amalgam dental fillings and the history of those because it allows me to show people a whole bunch of info about how mercury amalgams cause chemical depression, what they prescribe antidepressants for.
Oh,
it causes
God.
Inhibition of, you know, enzymes because it disables enzymatic processes between cells, you know, with minerals, and mercury inhibits zinc and magnesium and things like that, and it messes up your endocrine system. And if you get mercury amalgam fillings, you literally will get a feeling of chemical depression. It could leak up to 120 micrograms of mercury every day. And this is the perfect introduction point because that's what it really is about.
You know you know why this is freaking me out right now? Guess what I went to today? Guess where I went?
Huh.
The dentist.
Yeah.
And you know what they talked? They literally talked to me about amalgam mercury fillings. And I can't remember if they were trying to get me to get more or not. But it was the first dental appointment I've had in a long time where everything was okay. And here's the interesting irony is, and we've talked about this before, I've long suffered depression. I've gone through a number of different pharmaceutical routes to try and do it. And I used to take SSRIs for it, SSRIs being kind of the Prozac, Zoloft, Lexapro route for it.
Pfizer,
all of that stuff, yeah. And me and you, we talked about that for a long time. You were, you know, you disagreed with it, but I said, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And I did what I had to do for a long time, from the time I was 18 until now. And I'm, you know, now I'm not taking that stuff anymore. And I have to wonder what the hell the problem was and what the hell the problem is. And I think the problem is, more so than anything, whether I'm poisoned, whether I have, you know, whether it runs in my family, which it does. But I think the point is, we live in a sick culture. And I think right at the time of 18, I was a late bloomer. I didn't start going through puberty until I was like 17. So around the time that I started feeling these kind of tumultuous, disgusting, horrible feelings of depression and bipolar feelings, that was right around the time that I started being kind of inculcated in this society. And that was right around 9/11. 9/11 occurred my freshman year of college, and I think that sent everyone through kind of a national trauma. In my opinion, it was a prescribed trauma. They wanted us to feel it so that they could pass the Patriot Act, so that they could move into the Middle East. And they're still doing things like that, and they want us in this state of trauma. So they have these various chemical ways of inducing trauma, and then they have geopolitical false flag ways of inducing this kind of trauma. And I think we have to start there also. I wonder if you'll agree with me on there that we have to start by, and I know you'll agree with me on the false flag front, we have to start making that a part of the conversation so that people don't start misdiagnosing sources of trauma.
Absolutely. I made a point to note that there are I pretty much divided it up into two categories similar to that: circumstances of life, and then something that may cause literal endocrine disruption. And usually when they try to give you SSRIs, they talk about some kind of fictional chemical imbalance. It's more rare that it's actual endocrine disruption than the circumstances of life. But when it is chemical like that, it's things like mercury. It's not having the nutrients that keeps your endocrine system in balance. And people are just disconnected from health. And on the circumstances side, people are disconnected from a foundation of ambition or purpose, which can make all of their problems in life pale in comparison to the foundation that makes them, you know, keep going. The foundation is missing for many people.
I agree. And, you know, I do one thing that helps for my endocrine and for all my systems, actually. I do a form of yoga called Bikram yoga. And, of course, really hot yoga or any kind of yoga you want to do. I mean, Bikram got caught up in a sexual harassment lawsuit. And pretty much any man in a position of power at some point gets a sexual harassment lawsuit because he forgets who he is and decides he gets to have everything. But that's a tangent. Let's not get too tangential here. People do have to find sources of exercise, and for me, hot yoga is the way to do it. It flushes out all those toxins. But boy, I do like my sushi, and I don't like the idea that I can never have any mercury, because there's a lot of mercury in that fish, man.
Actually, I mentioned that there's one microgram of mercury per gram of fish exceeds the FDA standard. But amalgams leak 15 micrograms to 115 every day. It doesn't leave your body, really. So fish is nothing. Henry Schein is the world's basically largest dental healthcare provider corporation. They provide machinery for dentistry and things like that. They're the world's largest manufacturer of mercury amalgam. And someone from Henry Schein's board became the head of the FDA from 2009 to 2015. Margaret Hamburg, she was from the Clinton administration. Her father is the president of Carnegie Corporation of New York, and he was also the president of the American Eugenics Society for about 11 years. It was renamed something else after about 1952, I think.
There's a good reason that if you can afford it, you should be getting gold.
Yeah.
Gold in your teeth or in your...
Oh, yeah. Anytime you can embed gold in your body, it's got positive effects for you.
Well, there's that, too. I got the doctor, they talked about prescribing me lithium.
Oh, shit.
And I didn't take it, but the sound of lithium started making me feel good, and I researched it, and of course lithium is an element, and I went out and I bought a rock of lithium, and you know, without sounding too new agey here, I did start kind of meditating, and of course meditation is a wonderful form of kind of reclaiming your personal mental space. Definitely. So before anyone wants to cast aspersions on meditation, I'll just say I was meditating, and I'll just say that the lithium rock happened to be in the room while I was meditating. And that's been a fun experience for me. And I'm really starting to get more into these mineral earth rocks. But DB, so I asked Cassius, you know, what he thought his starting ground is. And we talk about this all the time, but you know, you mentioned us all buying property in Detroit, and I don't think you were being facetious. Are you saying that you want to start a kind of commune type, you know, scenario in which we're volunteering and living a kind of agorist style community?
Well, there's water. I mean, I don't know, man. There's entire city blocks that are being bought up right now by primarily Chinese investors. The reason they're doing that is because the groundwater underneath, it's worth way more than $500 for the house.
Right.
And they know that they're going to be able to tap into this if they buy enough. So why not ride the wave a little bit? And in the meantime, I mean, you can start communities. There's people up there right now squatting illegally, but you know, you don't need a huge, massive investment. I mean, I'm literally talking about 20 houses costing 10 grand. I mean, I'm pretty sure 10 people, pretty sure 40 people can come up with 10 grand. I mean, I'm talking about each two people can share a house and rebuild them all together. A squad of 40 people can rebuild 20 houses in a summer, easy.
New Era Detroit is already practicing agorism in Detroit.
Yep. I mean, you do it legal. Your taxes are super low because your house is worth nothing. It's not like you're going to call an appraiser back out there. Hey, come see what I did to my house.
If all else failed,
yeah,
good practice. Either way, I respect the idea enormously.
Yeah, you have unlimited water in Michigan. I mean, it's an ideal situation with the rainfall. You just have to wait to catch it and store it, and then the cropland's fertile, and you can grow crops during winter too. You just have to plant underground. You have to basically have a below-ground greenhouse set up. And they're not as expensive as it seems. And, yeah, you can get things going there pretty good. I mean, a lot of people are thinking about doing it, and it's probably a good time to do it.
There you go, people. A lot of good ideas. With the exception of my meditating with a lithium crystal, you've gotten some incredible incredible ideas going here. Quick shout-out to our host here, UCY.TV. This is the radio network that we're broadcasting on. And there's a lot of incredible programming on here. And
Brandon Turbeville, Dane Wigington.
Yeah, man. It's just, you know, this is the kind of stuff that people need to be listening to and not mainstream news and not fake news. And by that, I mean mainstream news, because mainstream
news. Well, I have something to say about that.
And I made this point earlier, and I want to reiterate it. So it's so tragically ironic to me that here we are talking about fake news and casting aspersions on alternative media sites, when for a clean decade, a baker's dozen years, we were lied to about the reason for being in Iraq. We were told that there were weapons of mass destruction there, and there weren't. And there was no evidence for it. There still is no evidence for it. And why? It's because they lied. They made it up. They made it up. And the media regurgitated, they acted like an echo chamber for anything the State Department wanted to say. And now that is fake news. That's dangerous fake news. That's fake news that costs people lives, costs people millions, trillions of dollars, millions of lives in Iraq. Now, how is that not fake news? Why are we not focusing on that kind of fake news? Why? Because it hurts the narrative.
You know, I think it's really revealing of the priority of the people that would call for fake news. One observation that came to me today was that, you know, the quickness with which they rolled this conspiracy theorist-esque term out was almost like they had it up their sleeves for a long time. And when did they release this thing that it seemed like it was up their sleeves? It was Pizzagate. That's crazy. You know, it's crazy, uh-oh. But, you know.
It's going to be... You know what they're going to do, man? They're just – this is something that a lot of people won't touch. And the simple fact is that this will blow open the government and split it in half, and half of them will be put away forever. And the information cannot get out until Trump is officially in. Otherwise, it will all be pardoned. So people need to understand that there's private jets gassed up and ready to go. the night of the inauguration.
The Pope's talking about fake news. The Pope, you know, is talking about fake news. And why did John Podesta meet the Pope? Did y'all know that? John Podesta has been photographed, not this Pope, shaking the hand of one of the other popes. And
we
all know where all pizza leads to Rome.
But, you know, didn't Merca today, they posted a meme, and I trust them more so than I trust CNN, I'll tell you that much. I mean... PolitiFact did a rundown of CNN that half of what CNN says is a half-truth. Now, if that's not fake news, I don't know what is. But Merca today said that there was actually a military action going on at Comet Pizza, that they actually have troops on the ground over there? I mean, do we have any information on that? Every time I hear about it, even NPR was coming out and saying ahead of themselves. They're literally speaking out of turn, saying that there is no truth to this. When they're not, it's not like they're bringing someone on, talking about it, and then saying, "Oh, actually, here's someone who disagrees with you." No, they're just saying, "Pizzagate is false. Don't listen to Pizzagate." I mean, can they sound any more sketchy about it?
They won't touch the actual evidence. You don't talk about pizza-related maps and pizza-related handkerchiefs in code in a WikiLeaks email and be John Podesta and not be talking about some coded shit. Let me tell people why James Alephantis of Comet Pizza and Ping Pong is not outside of the public domain to be scrutinizing. It's because he chose to befriend someone, Tony Podesta, who is responsible for foreign policy decisions. If you're an associate of someone making decisions that affect the lives of people in Yemen, who are bombed by Saudi Arabia with US-supplied weapons that Tony Podesta lobbied for, with his brother advising Obama, if you're an associate of that person, then you're in the public's eye. The public has a natural right to scrutinize you, especially if you have this type of shit going on. You know, it's not some random pizza place owner being harassed. It's someone that is unusually friends with some of the most powerful people in Washington who are responsible for murders in Yemen.
Go ahead, DB. I know you want to talk.
Sorry for the intensity.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was, I just sent you guys a couple things about, you know, how this isn't going to go away. You know, it's too much incriminating stuff. James, you know, child lover, which is what his last name means, is one of the 50 most powerful people in Washington because simply he has enough blackmail material to take probably the inner workings of this administration, the one before it, possibly all of them going back to probably Reagan, all going to be implicated. And it says a lot, man. It says that there's power factions duking it out right now. There's some pretty heavy-handed tactics taking place. The recount's happening now. The recount is basically coming out worse for Hillary. The demonstrations and the protests before didn't do what they were supposed to do, which was bring about some kind of a martial law situation. They couldn't get those going. They're running out of options. They're getting desperate. Like I said, man, the private planes are gassing up. People are going to flee if they can. There's going to get a lot of people like James are going to get thrown under the bus. But we've got to get to these kingpins. I mean, you utter names like Soros. You utter names like the Podestas. You utter names like whatever. I can't even keep track of all this roving casts of sickos, man. It really goes very, very, very high to the very top. I mean,
this is disgusting. I mean, this James Alefante guy, owner of Comet Pizza.
Here's the thing, man. The scariest part about it is that the Department of Defense itself had so many people looking at child porn that they had to actually have Congress put in a law to protect their own defense contractors because they were finding so much stuff. The NSA actually, and you can look this stuff up. I mean, it's all
well, vetted. And this is stuff people need to know that this is real. Someone close to me actually asked me after one of our last shows, is there really this much pedophilia going on? And I just had to laugh because, yes, pedophilia is rampant. And to think that it's not rampant at the highest levels of power where people have the ability to do whatever they want and get away with it, that's just the height of denial right there. To think pedophilia is real. It's been going on for a really long time, and it wasn't always considered a crime, but now it is, and it should be. And people are about to go down over it. And this, you know, we found a little nexus here in this pizza.
And there's place. And listen, there's tons of mainstream media articles starting to come out correlating where they're saying it doesn't prove there's harm to children. That pedophiles is not it's a mental disease. They need to be treated as if they can't control it. New York Times, Washington Post, the usual culprits. Look who owns them.
It is a mental disease. I know that doesn't make it not a crime, though.
Listen, it's a mental illness to have it, but it's a crime to act upon it.
Of course, right, yeah.
So that's where we draw the line, man. There's no curing someone who acts upon this. Now,
no one's
perhaps,
asking for
you know.
thought crimes to be criminalized. We're asking for acts against people. God, I can't believe there are people defending this. They must not know people that have been victims
of
this.
No, I don't think people are defending it. I think people are in denial that it's – I think people are in denial with the Jimmy Savile thing coming out and the Jerry Sandusky thing coming out. We like to have a single person that we can pin it on. People are in denial that it is as widespread as it is. I think that's where the denial comes in. And I think when that is blown off the roof, I think we are going to have some major soul searching as a nation and as a human race.
But what about those people that are not going to figure it out, no matter what?
Those people are going to die someday, and their children are going to wonder why daddy and mommy didn't.
Well, the question is, how much power do they have to bring us down? Even when we're as independent from – here's the thing. There are things that could affect agorism and our attempt to be free from this that are beyond our probable comprehension. That's where things like chemtrails and biological warfare come into play. I've been experiencing this the last several months, and I can so acutely tell when something is sprayed. It's just a really crazy – awakening that I've come to go through about that.
I just have one question for you guys right now.
Yeah.
You mind telling me what kind of fucking charade ends with somebody turning up dead?
And eyes wide shut? Hell yeah.
What kind of charade ends up with someone turning up dead? Yes. Eyes wide shut, my brothers.
But let me get one point in real quick.
Yeah, please go ahead.
If there is something that can slip our radar of priority, slip our radar of what we think we should be concerned about, something like chemtrails or something being sprayed on us or something so insidious and effective at silencing us, you know, that's how we're going to get got. We have to have such mindfulness that we're not susceptible to things that are even that far outside of our realm of comprehension, or the people that don't listen will bring us down even when we do the best we can. So remember that, anyone who's listening. Things that are so insidious that we can't easily factor them in.
Mind telling me what kind of charade ends with somebody turning up dead?
Answer me that question. Alright, so we've got about 3 minutes left. Cassius, I really appreciate you coming on, man. So tell us more about where you're at with the documentary. You said it's going to be about 90 minutes, and Josh has been doing the voiceover. And what do you think? You're tackling a buttload in this documentary. I mean, it's basically about all of the crimes of the pharmaceutical industries. Do you have an elevator pitch that you could pitch this thing in two sentences or one sentence?
Sure, I could do that. Well, it basically goes over.
You don't have to do. I mean, you could actually. You have 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty much like the history of Big Pharma, the 1600s to present day. It goes over how it's been rooted in pseudoscience and things like that, and it's been in this archetypal battle with naturopathy and strengthening the body's defenses forever. You know, Bayer and the European chemical companies that became the largest pharmaceutical companies started in dyestuffs. They started making coal tar dyes from an industrial waste product, and they were trying to synthesize malaria drugs like quinine out of coal tar. You know, it all comes from coal tar and poisoning people purposefully with lead and mercury to try to, quote, purge the body, bloodletting. It's been ridiculous forever, and it's just about as obscene as ever today, except today it's really complicated and insidious. And I also tie it into eugenics. Eugenics has actually been tied into the pharmaceutical industry for pretty much ever. The first mandatory sterilization law in the world was passed in 1907 in Indiana, about a year after the creation of the FDA by some of the same people. And Eli Lilly, who creates Prozac, has been the largest corporation in Indiana for a long time. Their first chief chemist, Dr. John Hurdy, was one of the people that influenced the passing of the first mandatory sterilization law in the world. And, you know, people like Dr. John Hurdy, David Starr Jordan, who was the first president of Stanford and was president of Indiana State University, these people show how the pharmaceutical industry, so many industries, psychiatry, were rooted in eugenics from the start. You know, these people have been separate from our class of people, which is the poor people, forever. They've been doing things that have been against our class of people. They've been a different class of people from us forever. So this is the full context, you know?
That sounds amazing, man. And and this is you're self-budgeting this, right?
Yep, just you know, giving Josh $30 a session for the narration. Nice. Writing it. It's about 35 pages long so far.
And you've been working on it for a while too.
Not too long, man. A little bit, pretty much this year. But I've been putting a lot of work into it.
Well, you got me thinking, dude. I had long been a not a supporter of antidepressants, but I always supported people who took them because I just feel like, you know, why beat someone when they're already down? But you've certainly gotten me thinking more about it.
Man, I've got some info for you about that. The destigmatization campaign against SSRIs was funded by the pharmaceutical companies through these foundations, just like the destigmatization effort about cigarettes led by Edward Bernays.
That's it for us, buddy. They're running us out of here.
Thanks everyone for coming on, Cassius. We'll dive into Pizzagate fully with LDs Friday, man.
All right, man. Sounds good. Peace.
Everyone love each other. Peace.
Yeah, love. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo. The answer.